You're listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We get to talk about hymns today.
I know.
It's good to talk about hymns and hymnody in general. One of our favorite things to do here on the Coffee Hour.
It definitely is. And ranks up there with coffee and bikes.
And and this is really kind of a special treat. We get to go beyond our usual boundaries here.
Oh, boy. We're
tearing down walls.
Yeah.
I know.
Out of our comfort zone.
into unfamiliar territory. When I learned about this this music and this this campus ministry pastor and the work that he's been doing, I thought, this is fascinating. This is good stuff, and we need to talk about it. And finally got the chance to talk with him. The Reverend Kevin Twitt, he's founder of Indelible Grace Music, and he's also campus pastor for Reformed University Fellowship at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, lots of great music in Nashville. So yeah, it makes sense that we're talking. So it makes sense we're talking about music today. And Pastor Twitt is with the Presbyterian Church in America (PCA) and friends right here in St. Louis. A lot of them train right here. I believe he was one of the students at Covenant Theological Seminary here in St. Louis. So he's coming to us from a Reformed tradition. Looking forward to talking with him about hymnody today. Pastor Twitt, thanks so much for joining us on the Coffee Hour.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
You've been with, how long have you been with Reformed University Fellowship at Belmont?
Yeah, since 1995. So I've finished 23 years, going into year 24. College students.
So you've been working with college students and doing campus ministry for some time now. That's noteworthy. What is the root of your love for hymnody?
Yeah. Well, two things. One is an essay I read in college when I kind of came alive to the gospel by C.S. Lewis called On the Reading of Old Books, where he suggested reading two old books for every one new book as a good way to get past some cultural blinders. So that sort of sent me looking to older books and finding them very helpful. But then the main thing was RUF was already doing a little of this when I came into RUF. But the more I would talk with students, particularly students who come from church backgrounds, they would talk about their doubts. And then what was really distressing to me was they felt like if they had doubts, maybe they weren't Christians at all. And a lot of them had come from churches that sort of had that kind of theological problem. But then what I realized is a lot of what was contributing to that feeling for them, that if they have doubts and they don't love Jesus with all their heart all the time, that maybe they're not even Christians. A lot of it was the songs they were singing. I felt the songs they were singing were lying to them about what the normal Christian life felt like. And so I was like, man, we've got to find some better songs to sing. Songs that are more honest about struggle and more explicit about the gospel.
So what prompted this this wanting to actually create this music and found Indelible Grace Music? What was that?
My background, was as a musician, a jazz musician. I trained at a place called Berklee College of Music up in Boston. Thinking outside the box kind of goes with the territory there. But a lot of it was seeing an RUF meeting. We don't have a piano. We don't have an organ. We have guitars and maybe some hand percussion like a djembe or a cajon. So you've got to find tunes that work in that instrumentation. And then a lot of what we were doing was, we were doing a lot of traditional tunes that you could adapt to guitar for hymns. But we also were finding texts that had dropped out of use. And you can sing those to pre-existing tunes. But after a while, I had so many, talented musicians, songwriters, that we started trying to come up with some new tunes. And like I said, that had been going on in RUF already. And then we started doing that. And we're using those songs for about 5 years before we decided to make a recording and share that music with other people. And then it just really hit a nerve, I think, with a lot of people. It also became a way to try to bridge some of the worship wars, because it was a way for students to be rooted in the tradition, but also add their own voice.
What was the response as you introduced this, or reintroduced in a sense, this great hymnody, the great texts of some of these, should we call them classic hymns, well-loved hymns that really transcend time in a sense? What was the response of students as you reintroduced this great text to these hymns?
Yeah. Well, some of them, a lot of the students had never really sung hymns, honestly. I mean, if you know much about the world of kind of broad evangelicalism, a lot of these students, if they knew any hymns, they might know Be Thou My Vision, Amazing Grace, just a handful. So, the response from the students was generally pretty positive. Once they began to read these texts, and once it was set to music that seemed to speak their cultural language, that really helped them see what the texts were saying. We got some complaints from some people about changing the tunes for hymns. On the first record we did, there were definitely some texts that were more popular that have been retuned. But we didn't actually know that some of those hymns were still being sung, actually. And then after that first record, I really began to search for texts that were more obscure and that didn't have a tune already that was a good tune. But the idea of putting a new tune to a text, that's a long, time-honored tradition. One example, Abide With Me, one of, the best loved hymns. It's England's greatest, loved hymn. Henry Light put his own tune to that, but it's not the tune you think of as the traditional tune. The traditional tune was written by William Monk about 25, 30 years later. So when we put a new tune to it, we're not actually even retuning the original tune because that had already been done back in the 1800s. So sometimes some of people's concerns, I think, arose from a lack of understanding of the history of church music. And then, of course, it's pretty subjective whether a tune works well or not. But my contention is that every text has more emotional range than any one tune can bring out. And sometimes you hear the text afresh when it's set to a new tune.
Absolutely. Some people like to say that hymns are old, stuffy, irrelevant. I don't think so.
You don't get that from us.
No, but what do you say to the people that that think that hymnody is kind of a thing of the past?
Yeah. I found a sign in an antique store one time that said, "My grandmother saved it, my mother threw it away, and now I'm buying it back." That feels like what we've been trying to do. It generally is the baby boomers who think that the music is stuffy and needs to be thrown out. But the young people love this. They want to know that what they're singing is rooted in something that's not so ephemeral as the latest kind of cultural fad. And so I found often, it's more the baby boomers that threw a lot of this stuff out. But the young people are really interested in this. They're really interested in rich experience, and I think some of the greatest expressions of Christian experience and of struggle, more honest about struggle, are in these hymn texts. So generally, once students kind of get into it, they get really jealous for it.
What are some of your favorites? I know this is always a dangerous question to ask a musician.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not a fair question to ask a musician
really
or a pastor, but I ask it anyway. Some of your favorite hymns, either because of the melody or because of the text or the combination of the two.
Yeah. Well, the Lutheran, hymnody is really rich. Some of my favorite hymns are German Lutheran and German Reformed hymns. And I didn't know those so well in the first couple records, but I've definitely, delved deeper into that, especially actually as a songwriter. A lot more interesting meters in German hymnody, and more than just common meter, long meter, short meter. So it provides like a little creative spark to try to write in a different meter. Some of my favorites, though, are by Anne Steele. She's a Reformed Baptist English lady who lived back in the late 1700s, and she wrote one called Dear Refuge of My Weary Soul. That one just struck me when I first found it in an old hymnal. Like, I just couldn't believe that you were allowed to say something like that in church. So that's really been a very formative text. One of my favorites, also by John Newton, Let Us Love and Sing and Wonder. It's so explicit about the gospel, where it talks about when through grace in Christ our trust is just as smiles and ask no more. The gospel isn't just a fresh opportunity to start over and try to impress God, but just a smile because of what Jesus did, living and dying in the place of sinners and his righteousness, imputed to us. And my students need to know that because so many of the modern songs are basically saying, God, love me because I love you so much. And when you don't feel that, then you really wonder what God thinks about you. So it's so important that justification not just be mentioned, but be unpacked in the songs we're singing, because I really believe worship is formative, like it or not. We are shaping people's understanding of the gospel and what it feels like to be a Christian by the songs we sing. So we better attend to what we're singing.
Hymnody has obviously been a great part of your campus ministry. What does it mean to the students to have this this richer, deeper understanding of who we are as Christians, as children of God, that comes across in this hymnody? You know, what does it mean to them, and how does that equip them from when they leave your campus ministry and go on to their next chapter in life?
Right. Oh man, the best way I can answer that is point you to a documentary film that we made. It's called Roots and Wings, the story of Indelible Grace and RUFMs. You can look at it for free on YouTube, because we made that documentary 10 years after the first CD. And so you get to hear some of the students reflecting 10 years later on what it's meant. The other thing I'd say is we had a 20th anniversary of the ministry of Belmont RUF a few years ago, and virtually every student that gave testimony to what RUF had meant to them talked about the songs. They didn't talk about my sermons. And I think every preacher I know has had that kind of experience. Again, like, the point is, you know, the songs are formative. And so hopefully what you're building into students is a more nuanced understanding of what the Christian life feels like, that it's not, you know, just all happy-clappy all the time. You know, Rock of Ages, you know, that great hymn text by Augustus Toplady. His original title for that text was A Living and Dying Prayer for the Holiest Believer on Earth. It's quite a mouthful. But that verse, it says, could my zeal no respite know? That means even if I could be fired up for Jesus all the time, could my tears run this low? Even if I could weep over my sin the way I should, all for sin could not atone. Thou must save and thou alone. Like, that's what needs to get into our heart and soul. And I found these songs, this rich theological poetry, really has a great way of doing that. And it shouldn't surprise us, because that's what Paul says in Colossians 3. For the word of Christ, I would translate it, the word about Christ, the gospel, to dwell in us richly. The you there is plural. And so in other words, to be a gospel-driven community, we need to sing. Because singing intensifies whatever it is we're doing, whether it's praise or lament. And we want this gospel to dwell in us, our community, richly. And Paul says singing is vital for that.
Have you noticed any culture shift? I guess, students coming in maybe from a background of singing just for the sake of singing, and discovering mm-hmm. that the text actually means something, and that these hymns actually, you can actually learn something from these hymns. Have you noticed that at all with your students?
Yeah, I think, we're not the only ones that have been picking up on the idea of reworking hymns or trying to introduce hymns. When we started this in the 90s, there wasn't much going on. But now, the Passion folks have done work with hymns. A lot of people have been working with hymns. And so I find my students are already more inclined to be open to hymns than they probably were 20 years ago. That is an encouraging thing to me. I think that this, younger generation really doesn't want a watered-down gospel. And so once they find out that these hymns exist and they begin to see what they're like, I think they really grab hold of it. Not all of them, but, man, a lot of them have really grabbed hold of it in a huge way.
The Reverend Kevin Twitt, founder of Indelible Grace Music and campus pastor for Reformed University Fellowship at Belmont University, Nashville, Tennessee. Pastor Twitt, thanks so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour and your insights on hymnody.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. Lord bless you all in your labors.
You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO, the listener-supported broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit kfuo.org or text KFUO to 41444. KFUO, Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.
Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.